You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And Mike Graham.
Okay, Mike, so there's not a ton to talk about this week. Ticats were on a bye, so there's not really a whole heck of a lot of Ticats news, but there is some big CFL news, I think. We can all agree on this. The CFL looks like they have a new commissioner. It looks like it nothing's official yet, obviously, but the rumors are out there and reported by Three Down Nation and other people that the CFL's new commissioner will be Randy Ambrosi. So to give a little background information on him, he played 9 seasons in the CFL with the Stampeders, the Argos, and the Eskimos after being drafted second overall in the 1985 draft. And he won a Grey Cup with the Edmonton Eskimos in 1993. When his career ended, he spent 2 years as the secretary of the Players Association. Then after that was over, he got into the business sector and he was the president and or CEO of 3 different companies between 2004 and 2016. And he was apparently the runner-up to Jeffrey Orr 2 years ago. So this is a guy that the Board of Governors did have a little bit of faith in. So you look at it and you hear this resume and you go, he kind of checks all the boxes, right? Former player, knows the league both as a player and then outside with the PA stuff. He's been a successful businessman. He's a Canadian. So he checks all the boxes that everyone's always like, this is what I want, a perfect commissioner. Does this mean people will finally shut the f*** up and not complain about this hiring?
Well, there's going to be some people out there, obviously, but you're right. He does check off all the boxes that people wanted. He's run some very big businesses. He played in the league, all that stuff. So I really like the playing aspect and the Canadian aspect of it. He knows the league in and out. You know, he has a familiarity with the CFLPA, and you know, he knows how the players feel. I think he can maybe bridge that gap between the owners and the players right now, but we shall see about that. That's going to be a tough one. I think that we might actually see a strike the next time it comes around, but I'm hoping not.
You think?
But yeah, I'm pretty excited about. I don't know. I think that some of the veteran players are pretty upset with some of the money they're getting, but that's just an assumption on my part. But I'm excited about it. I think that the whole player thing is a huge thing. He knows the rules, he knows the league in and out, so that's great, I think.
What do you think is going to be, every commissioner sort of has a thing, right? Like they're known for something they do. I think you can even look at Jeffrey Orr, who people said didn't really do anything. I think that CFL Week initiative that he set up just as he was leaving office, I think that's going to be one of his lasting legacies. What do you think could be this guy's like first order of business? What do you think it'll be, once again, like it is what seems to be with every commissioner, you know, get the Argos settled and now deal with some issues in BC. Do you think that's what he's going to be, or do you think there's going to be something different that he might try to tackle first?
It's a good question. I think that BC, Montreal, and Vancouver are the big 3 franchises that are, you know, kind of falling behind attendance-wise. So I think that'll be at the top of the list for this guy. But there's other issues as well. You know, we've been talking about the replay system and all that stuff. And, you know, maybe he makes some tweaks in the rule book a little bit. But, you know, being a former player and all that, but that'll be tough. You know, the season's already started. So I think the first thing on his list will be the Toronto Argonauts, followed by BC and Montreal.
How soon do you think after he's officially announced as commissioner, will we see someone talking about expansion and a video game? What do you give it? 5 minutes? Maybe like the first, you know, 10 or so comments on Facebook or Twitter or wherever?
It's going to be quick because those are always the questions that are put forward to the commissioner. And And I want to see both those things as well, but I don't think it can be a very quick fix, especially the 10th team. I mean, there's so many things that need to be done to make that happen. So I'm sure he'll be asked those questions very quickly. Yeah, I'm positive of it.
Do you feel like there's a little more optimism with this hire? Because that's sort of what I'm feeling. And maybe it's because people just really didn't like Jeffrey Orridge. Personally, I didn't have a problem with him. I think he did a decent job. I don't think he did anything spectacular, but he was also only on the job for like 2 years. So it's really hard to kind of make a mark like Mark Cohan did. He was commissioner for almost 8 years. So you can do a little bit more there. And Orridge and Cohan were two different people. But I am sensing that there seems to be a lot more optimism with this hire than there was with Orridge's hire. Why do you think that is? Personally, I'm guessing the things that you said, being a Canadian and being a former player, is probably what it is. I guess you'd probably agree.
I'd have to agree with that. I think that, you know, with Orridge, he wasn't a Canadian, obviously. He didn't really know the league. So this guy comes in and, you know, he doesn't have to be taught the league like Orridge did, or even Mark Cohan. I mean, people forget that he wasn't exactly Mr. CFL when he started his job, but he learned along the way and he did a pretty damn good job. So with this guy coming in already having an extensive knowledge of the league, he has a pretty good head start.
Yeah, I just feel like there's a lot more positivity coming out of this hire. You look at like articles about it or comments on social media and you see just a lot more positivity from fans around the league thinking that this is the right hire. So who knows if he'll be successful or not. I know I speak for myself. I probably speak for you as well by saying I hope he's successful. I hope he's a long-term commissioner and he takes this league to even greater heights than they're at right now.
Yeah, and let's hope that the owners don't scare him off too soon, because that's always been a problem, right?
Yeah, true. Now, I did do a little talking to some people who kind of know him a little bit, and without revealing too much information, I understand he's very headstrong. Very blunt, very like you know if you're on his side or not, you know what I mean? So he's a guy who's not going to take a lot of guff, and I can't imagine that he would accept this role without letting the owners know exactly who he is and with the owners not knowing what type of person he is. So it's always tough with the commissioners to get all those owners on sides. You get two or three malcontents and you're done. It's not like being a commissioner in another sport where there's 30, 32 teams. There's nine teams in here. If you get a couple of owners or governors on the board there that just don't see your vision, you can get sunk pretty quickly. But I got to think that in going back to this guy, if he was indeed the runner-up a couple of years ago, there's got to be something about him that they like. And like you said, I hope that they give him the breadth to implement his vision. And he's a long-lasting commissioner, and we get some stability in this position for the first time outside of – because outside of Cohan, there hasn't really been a ton of stability commissioner-wise over the years. Like who would you say was the longest tenured in your lifetime out of Cohan? Would it have been like Larry Smith?
That's the first name that came to mind. Maybe, you know, I was alive in the 80s, but I don't really remember the commissioners. Maybe there was one back then. But yeah, Larry Smith, I'm not even sure how long he lasted. I think it was a good term, like maybe 5 or 6 years. I'm not sure.
Yeah, and then he went and became like a exec with the Alouettes, so he stayed around the game for a long time afterwards, and his legacy is obviously American expansion. But yeah, it's just we've had John Torrey, we've had Michael Lisko, we've had Tom Wright. Like, it just seems to be a revolving door, and Cohan was that stable guy for all those years, and now I hope that this guy can be sort of a stable force and we can get a plan implemented and then seen to fruition, you know what I mean?
Yeah, just let him do his thing, let him do what he thinks is right for the league, you know, not get in his way. And hopefully there's a lot of good things that come out of his time as commissioner.
So we brought up the Argos and talking about the commissioner, and this is something that I think we should talk about just so pretty much we don't talk about it again. And it's the attendance problems in Toronto. It's a new season and the problems are still there. The Argos had another rough week at the gate. Attendance was just over 11,000 for the game against BC on Friday. That's a week after they had just over 13,000 for the season opener against the Ticats. And like I said, I really just want to talk about this so that we're not talking about it every single week, because to me, the attendance issues in Toronto are there. They exist. This isn't news. And we can't be talking about it each and every week because we're going to drive ourselves crazy. So I think we'd be remiss if we didn't bring it up because it is an issue league-wide. But what is there to do? Like, this is either going to get fixed or it won't. And sitting here going, oh, the Argos had bad attendance again, and taking pictures and putting them on social media, like, it doesn't help the matter. It doesn't do anything. I don't think it hurts it either. It's just kind of like it's beating a dead horse, essentially, I think, at this point. So yeah, the Argo attendance sucks, but quite frankly, I'm tired of it being a conversation every time the Argos play at home. I know you and I have talked about this off mic before, so I know you feel the same way.
The thing that I'm just sick of is feeling sorry for the Argonauts. I may have said this before in a previous podcast, but it's just like, we're supposed to hate them, right? And all they do is feel sorry for them. And I almost want them to do good because then maybe the fans will show up. But I've learned not to think that because I don't think it matters if they play well. I don't think it matters if they're – unless they're like flirting with a perfect season, maybe people might come out. I just don't know what to do anymore. We thought a couple years ago that the BMO field move was going to help them, and it might even be worse now. I don't know what the marketing is like in Toronto. I don't know if they're trying really hard with that. I mean, they should be. The Bell and Tannenbaum have more money than God, so I don't know what the problem is there. It's just the Argos are dead right now in Toronto. They're nothing. No one gives a shit about them, and that could change, but as of right now, at this point, it's pretty damn sad. And, you know, it doesn't help when people are showing pictures of how empty the stadium is, because people don't want to go out, spend their money to an empty stadium. They want to go to, you know, a stadium with that's happening. That's people are there having fun. They don't want to go where there's 11,000 people in a 32,000 seat stadium or whatever it is. It's just tough, and I don't know when or if it's ever going to change.
They're a tarnished brand. I don't know how it happened, honestly. It just seems like over time, people stopped caring about the Argos. And I get it. In a city like Toronto, I lived there for almost 10 years. There is a ton of stuff to do in Toronto. And I guess for the most part, the Argos have been irrelevant on the field. We can probably count – there's been a couple of Grey Cup seasons, sure, but we can probably count on one hand the amount of seasons where you went in going, man, the Argos are a force here. And – It's a long rebuild, and I think everyone really got their hopes up. I think including myself and yourself, when they announced the move to BMO last year, I think we all were like, okay, this is it. This is the start of making this a thing. And it didn't happen. I think we all got too ahead of ourselves. I think it can be revived. I don't know how, but it needs stability. Now, they have the ownership, like you said, that have more money than God himself. So if they're committed to this and they are fine with losing money but keeping this afloat and working hard, it can work. The Ticats were an issue not that long ago. I think I've even said this on the show. The Toronto problem used to be a Southern Ontario problem. And then Bob Young came in and bought the team. And after in the midst of a 1-17 season, they dealt with some terrible football teams. We're all aware of winning like 15, 16 games over the course of four seasons and watching some really bad football. But he stuck it out. He said it was important for him to keep this team afloat. And now look at them. They're a money-making endeavor with a brand new stadium, and people care about this team. It's going to be harder in Toronto, but that doesn't mean it's impossible. They just need ownership to be stable. And yes, we could be doing this show for 5 years and it might not get fixed, but at some point it can turn around if the owners are willing to accept it. Maybe I'm being an optimist, but I saw it happen firsthand here in Hamilton, so I know it can happen elsewhere.
The thing is, I mean, they didn't do any favors for themselves last year. The first season at BMO, with the whole Grey Cup pricing debacle, and I think they overpriced the regular season tickets. I think the regular season tickets might be still overpriced. I think they need to just take a look at that whole thing and just lower it down, because I've always had the theory, better to have a packed house with lower-priced tickets than a half-full house with high-priced tickets. It just creates a buzz. It's a better atmosphere. I don't understand why more teams don't adopt this theory, but I don't know. I'm not a businessman, so maybe I'm completely off with that. But I think that's what they need to do. I think they need to lower it down quite a bit and, you know, talk about it, advertise it. Hey, our highest price ticket is $60 or whatever. Come on out and get a great seat and watch the Argonauts play. I don't know, something like that.
I think the only problem with lowering ticket prices too much is then you devalue the ticket itself. And I think that that's a problem the Argos had for years when they're at the Dome, is that they were giving away so many free tickets that people were like, well, why am I going to pay for it if I'm just going to be able to find a free one an hour before kickoff anyway? I do agree with you that they do have to lower ticket prices, and I absolutely agree with you that it's better to have 25,000 people in there, because then they're paying for concessions, they're buying merchandise, you're creating an atmosphere where people want to be at the game, and reasonably priced tickets get people in the door. And it's better to have the customer in the door than to have them sitting on their couch watching from TV. Because the thing we do know is that the Argos do really good ratings on TSN. There's like 250,000 or so people just in the city of Toronto that watch CFL football. You see it in the ratings reports each week. But yet they only get 11, 13, 15,000 to a game. That means that there is 200,000 people out there because they don't want to pay. And I can say this, that the ticket price, they're too expensive. I got the cheapest seat in the building for the game I went to a week ago. It was $22.50, but it was in the corner of the end zone in the main stands. But there were tickets for $70, $80, in some cases up to $250. The Argos cannot be charging $250 for tickets. They just can't. But there are football fans in Toronto, and that's why I think that if they get people in the door, you get them in that stadium, it's a fantastic place to watch a football game. Like, no lie, it's as good as any stadium I've ever been in to watch a football game. The sight lines, I said, I was sitting in basically the corner of the end zone, and you could see the entire field. There was nothing I couldn't see. Compare that to the Sky Dome, where I've sat middle of the second deck and not been able to see corner. Like, it's worlds different. Again, I'm with you. I don't want to feel sorry for these guys. I don't want to say, well, I want them to do well because then they'll bring the fans in, because I'm not a fan of the Argos. And I don't think there's any way that team's going to fold. I honestly don't. I don't think the league would let that happen. I think they would sink money into it or own the damn thing themselves to avoid that from happening, because I think the people at the office, league office, know if there's no Argos, there might not be a league, because you lose the Toronto media market, people aren't going to care. If you lose all that sponsorship money, because the Argos should have major, like, you look at Argos games, they have major sponsors on the like, not on the field, but on the banners around. Like, there are people that are willing to pay to advertise these games. It's something that can be fixed, but like I said, it's going to take a long time, and this is why talking about, oh, they only had 12,000 people this week, it doesn't matter, because it's not going to get fixed overnight. So we just need to we've said our piece about it, and I think we just need to move on.
Do you have any idea what the pricing is like for TFC games?
I do not. I've never been to a TFC game. I don't think they're that expensive. But what I can do is I can do a little research. My dad, who I will talk to, has been to a ton of TFC games. Not anytime recently, like back when they first started. My dad likes soccer. He was going, I'll ask him what he paid for tickets. I'll look it up. We can come back to this next week and have a quick chat about TFC prices versus Argo prices if you'd like.
Yeah, because if they're closer, you know, even more expensive than it, I don't know. I guess the Argo fans just aren't as dedicated as the TFC fans, because if that's the case.
It could be. Well, you know what? We will put a pin in the TFC Argos ticket stuff until next week, and I'll come back to you with some answers. All right, before we move on, one bit of Ticats news. It's something we did talk about last week, Mike, but now it's official. Terrence Tolliver has been put on the 6-game injured list. He's likely out for the season. I don't think anyone thinks that it's – he's on the 6-game because he might come back after 6 games. He's on the 6-game because there's nothing larger than the 6-game. So now the question becomes, what are the Ticats' options? There's really two of them. They can look internally at players that they have on the practice roster or injured list, or externally and look at a guy who's on the street. So I think that they're going to just go with a guy like Junior Collins or – couple of practice roster guys that showed really well in the preseason training camp. Damar Altman, I think you'll remember from the last preseason game, looked pretty good. And Jalen Saunders is another guy who, from all reports, had a really good camp but got hurt. I think that's where they're going to go. But there would be no fun in just talking about the guys that they have on the team already. What about guys that aren't on the team that they could bring in? And the one name that I see popping up amongst fans, and it's the one name that I thought of, Torrey Gurley. Big-bodied receiver,
yeah,
similar in size to Tolliver. This is a guy who just 2 years ago tied for the league in touchdowns, so he didn't forget how to play the game of football over the last 2 years. If they're going to go outside of the team, and I should stress enough that I don't think they're going to, he's got to be the guy you bring. I remember when they were all cut last year. He was the guy that you and I sat here and said, that's the guy we want to see them bring in. He ended up going to, I think, Winnipeg, and then he was in Ottawa, and then he got cut. I don't know. If they're going to go outside the team, I think Torrey Gurley's the home run pick, no?
That's the only name that came to mind, too, when thinking of, a taller free agent receiver. It was Torrey Gurley. So I don't know what, the Toronto thing, he got cut because of, they had bad attitudes. At least that's what they said. And then he went to Winnipeg, didn't really do much, and then he got cut from Ottawa. So I'm wondering why. I mean, this guy is a talented dude. He can put up touchdowns on the board. He can make plays. I just don't understand why teams are giving up on him. But that's the only name that came to mind. I also think that'll be internal, next man up kind of deal. That's more of the Austin way. So I hope they have like Junior Collins or one of these new guys. I hope they have the talent to at least partially replace Terrence Tolliver, because that's going to be a tough spot to fill.
Well, especially because of what Tolliver brings to the table, right? Like with the size and speed, there's few guys who can replicate that. He's 6'5". None of the other receivers on this team are that big. None of the guys that they have that could step up are that big. That's the only reason I bring up a guy like Gurley, because he is like 6'3", 6'4", and we've seen him produce. It would be an interesting decision to bring him in. Again, like I said for the third time, I don't think they will. But there'd be no fun in us just going, well, they're going to just go with the next guy on the team. We got to speculate a little bit, no?
Yeah, we do. And you think about losing Fantuz. He's, 6'4", I believe, and losing Tolliver, 6'4", 6'5". The other receivers aren't that tall, so we're missing that height right now.
Yeah, it definitely makes the Ticats receiving core a little less multifaceted than it was with these guys in the lineup, but you can't replace size, and obviously you can't. Terrence Tolliver is arguably one of the best receivers talent-wise that is in this league. His numbers haven't always been at the top of the pack, but for a guy with his size, his speed, his pedigree, I think we all expected big things from him. I think he obviously expected big things from himself. It's a shame to see him go down, but it is next man up. So I'll be interested to see who gets inserted into the lineup for him this week against the Rough Riders.
Yeah, that's going to be very interesting. I mean, who are they going to replace him with? I guess we'll find out pretty soon.
We will indeed. Okay, so that's it for news, both Ticats and otherwise. Mike, it's time for everyone's favorite segment. It's time for the Bozo of the Week. Do you have one for us this week?
I do. I saw a little tweet that you retweeted. I'm not sure it was by, but TFC fans in the end zone at one of their games, they had their Nowhere Goes at BMO sign, and they were doing the little chant, Nowhere Goes at BMO, whatever it was. We don't want the Argos at BMO. And it's like you said in your tweet, it's a done deal. They've been there a year already. They're not going anywhere. Why are they still putting up this fight? Why are they still crying about this? It just flabbergasts me to think that this is still an issue with these TFC fans.
It's tiresome. It's almost as tiresome as talking about the Argos attendance issues, honestly. I feel like these guys, we should just elect them to the Bozo of the Week Hall of Fame, because it seems like every time TFC has a game, they're out there doing their chants, and instead of focusing on the game they're actually there to watch, they are worried about another team in another league playing on their precious pitch. And the thing is, I have never met, honestly, and I say this 100% honestly, an Argo fan who has said, well, I don't want TFC playing on this field. You know what I mean? Like, Argo fans have been magnanimous about this and have said, look, it's a shared facility. They brought up the facts that it was meant to be built to house a CFL team. They brought up the fact that TFC and Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment did not build this stadium with their own money. It is a public facility. This idea that TFC has territorial rights over BMO Field is ridiculous, has always been ridiculous, and will continue to be ridiculous. And if they want to sit there and waste their precious time chanting, we don't want the Argos at BMO, like, go ahead, because you're pretty much just screaming at a wall right now, because it's, like I said, it's a done deal. It's happening. It's happened. It's not going to be just because they're sitting there in the end zone chanting, well, we don't want the Argos here, doesn't mean they're all of a sudden the Argo ownership is going to go, oh, you know what? They're right. We should just we'll go play at the University of Toronto, or we'll go play at York, or we'll go play in the middle of nope. Like, it's done. Stop complaining about it, because you just make yourself look stupid.
Yeah, and I still see the argument of, you know, build your own stadium. It's like, where, how, with what money? I don't know. It just bugs me that I turn on like a soccer game, especially TFC, I see them jumping around in the seats, you know, chanting. And it's like, I think it's because the game on the field is so boring that they have to jump around like assholes to like entertain themselves. I don't know. I just, soccer fans, I know that they're not all bad, you know, even the TFC fans. I'm sure there's tons of TFC fans that are good people and all that stuff, but it just gets under my skin, you know?
Well, there's a crossover. There are some TFC fans that are CFL fans, and the two can coexist. The thing that kills me is that across MLS, there are teams that share stadiums with football teams. The team out in New England plays where the Patriots play. The team in Seattle plays where the Seahawks play. The Vancouver Whitecaps play at BC Place where the Lions play. Like, this is not...
They're better than them, though, Josh. They're better than them.
But it's like, this is idiotic. Like, there's no one else complains about this. The Montreal Alouettes, this isn't something that we talked about, just signed this 3-year deal with the Olympic Stadium people. They're going to play a game at Olympic Stadium. But in part of the deal, it said that they're going to... That they reached an agreement with the Montreal Impact, another MLS team, to practice on their practice field. Now, obviously, it's not the same as playing a game there, but everywhere else, these teams can cohabitate except for Toronto. Why is it that TFC fans feel like they are owed this stadium? And they can talk about, oh, go build your own. Well, you know what? Go build your f***ing own. You didn't build this yourself. Piss off.
They never understand that argument, though. It'll never get through to them.
Well, is it because they think that we were here first, so we get it? No, that's not how it works. Yeah. You know, that doesn't work when you're a 3-year-old and don't want to share your toys with another kid. Doesn't work when you're an adult.
And they should be working, like MLS and CFL should be working together. You know, I think about maybe a stadium out east, and if they had like a MLS team and a CFL team, maybe that would be a better argument to the government to build a stadium, because there would be more events there, you know, year round, or not year round, but close to it. I mean, the MLS season lasts 14 months out of the year. So, I mean, you know what I mean? So they should be working together.
I totally agree. I think all these sports should cross, because fans of sports are fans of sports. Now, I'm a much bigger football fan than I am a soccer fan or a baseball fan or a hockey fan, but I still keep up with all of it. I follow all of it. If I'm sitting home on a Saturday afternoon and there's nothing on and a Blue Jays game is on, I will watch it. And I don't, I like baseball, but I don't love baseball. I'm not even a Blue Jays fan. So if you like sports, you like sports. And I think if these teams and these leagues cross promoted a little bit more, I feel like it would be for the betterment of everyone. Why not do something say, hey, if you buy tickets to this Argo game, you get a ticket to a TFC game. Or if you buy a TFC ticket, you get a ticket to, like, cross promote each other, and it's better for everybody. Because you might find some CFL fans. In the same way that we say, you know what, you should bring someone who's never watched a CFL or who says they don't like the CFL, bring them to a CFL game and let them watch it and see how much enjoyment they get out of it. It can work the other way, too. There could be a CFL fan sitting out there going, oh, soccer. Like, well, you said soccer's boring, and I don't necessarily agree with that. I enjoy watching soccer, but I understand why you said that. But what happens if someone came up to you and said, hey, I got this free ticket to a soccer game. You want to come? You might get into the stadium and really enjoy yourself. You know what I'm saying?
And I'm sure, you know, the beautiful game, whatever, I'm sure it can be enjoyable to watch. I guess we shouldn't get into, like, the whole soccer, you know, what I hate about it. But I just don't like the players flopping around when they get touched by a mosquito. I can't stand that. But anyways, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I totally get it. But it's like with anything. Like, my dad, for instance, just became a Ticat season ticket holder last year. And he's always liked the CFL. He took me to my first game. He watches it on TV. But there's something about going to a live game that gets your juices flowing a little more than it is when you're watching on television. Ticats are going to play a game this week. It's in Saskatchewan. I'm not going to be there. We watch it on TV. And while I'm going to enjoy myself and like watching the game, there's just something about being at a live sporting event that makes it just a little bit more fun. And I think that could be the same with all sports. Baseball, like I said, I know a lot of people that say baseball is boring. But you go to a baseball game and it can be a fun afternoon. It's the same with any sport. So why these teams don't cross-promote, especially these two teams that share a stadium, why they aren't trying to figure out a way to better both teams makes absolutely no sense to me.
I don't know if I'd like the jumping around and the scarves, though. I don't like those things.
You don't like jumping or scarves?
No. That's a soccer thing, you know, jumping around like idiots in their, with their goddamn scarves and their cappuccinos. I don't know.
Oh, boy. Okay, should we move on from soccer and talk some actual CFL football, as in a game that will be played this week?
Yeah.
Okay, so we took last week off, obviously, talking a game preview because the Ticats didn't have one. So Hamilton's coming off their bye this week, and they're hoping to get one in the win column where they take on their winless compatriots in Saskatchewan. So, you know, the bye week was pretty good for the Ticats. Not something we talked about, but all other teams in East Division lost. So the Ticats lost absolutely no ground in the divisional race, which I know it sucks to be, you know, hey, oh, every other team lost. It's good for us, but it was good for us. And I know it's really early, so obviously even if every team would have won, it's not like the Ticats are out of the playoffs with that. But, hey, it's nice to know that your team takes a bye week. They come back, and they're basically in the same spot they were a week before. That's pretty good. So the Riders themselves, they played. They started 0-2 this year for the third straight season. Lost a heartbreaker in overtime to the Bombers in the opening of their new stadium. So I think the Riders are going to really want to get that losing taste out of their mouths and get their first win at their new home. I think this is going to be a tough one for the Ticats, Mike.
Yeah, I'm a little scared just because they didn't pull off the win against Winnipeg this week. And now they're going to be even more hungry for that first win. So, yeah, I'm pretty nervous about this game, actually.
Yeah, it's got my nerves a bit on edge as well. Teams that you always think by default, you kind of give the teams at home the edge, right? Like you think they're at home, they should probably win. This is that new stadium. They're probably still going to be another sold out crowd. They were loud as all get out against Winnipeg. Hamilton's not really a rival, so maybe they won't be as into it. But I don't know. I'm a little nervous about this one as well. And this was one when we get to our picks in a little bit that was a little tough for me to decide, honestly.
Yeah, it was tough on me too. But I think we both went the same way, probably. Or maybe not.
We'll see. Doing what we always do, breaking this down, offensive and defensive, there's really only one thing offensively that I'm looking at. We know the Ticats aren't going to run the ball, so we might as well just never talk about that again and just really concentrate on the passing game. And I think the big thing the offense needs to do in this game is take advantage of Saskatchewan's mystifying love with rushing just three people. We saw Matt Nichols pick apart the Riders to the tune of four touchdown passes. And Matt Nichols, to me, is maybe the worst starting quarterback in the CFL. And I don't mean that he's terrible. I just mean, I think if I was ranking the starters in the league 1-9, I probably would have him ninth. So Matt Nichols is no Zach Calero. So if the Riders are really determined to rush just three, that should give Zach a ton of time to take shots downfield. And we know how much he enjoys throwing the deep ball. And if the deep passing game starts to work, that's going to open up the stuff in the middle for guys like Luke Tasker and Kevin Elliott to pick that apart. That to me is going to be the key to this game. If they can get the protection on those three-man rushes and give Zach Calero some time, I think he can make a ton of plays against what isn't a great Saskatchewan Rough Riders defense, even if they got nine men back there. You know what I mean? I think that's the key to this. When they rush three, and they rush three more than anyone else in the league, that's when they got to take their shots.
You got to really question Chris Jones and whoever's calling the plays on defense, because if they don't, you know, send the house quite a bit, they're not really studying the Ticats offensive line and the Ticats offense at all. So, yeah, you're right. If they send three and Zach has a lot of time, I think he's going to pick them apart. But if they send three and they get pressure, then I might have a goddamn heart attack.
If they rush, three,
yeah,
and they pick up three or four sacks rushing three, it's game over. This game's over by the end of the half, and then we're gonna come in here next year. We're gonna have some serious questions to ask about whether this team is any good or not. But if they give him just a little bit of time with those three man rushes, he's gonna hit some big plays. Guys like Timms are gonna get open downfield, and he's gonna take a shot. Mike Jones, fast guy, take a shot. They have to take their shots. We saw Matt Nichols take his shots, and he did well. Zach Calero could do the exact same thing.
Yeah, that's going to be, if they do send a lot of three-man pressure, that's going to be a big benefit to the Ticats, I think.
Yeah, so that's all I got to talk about the offense. Because like I said, I'm not going to bother talking about, well, they should give CJ Gable the ball 15 times. That's a waste of my breath. It's a waste of the people listening to this. It's a waste of you listening to this. So that's it. That's all I got about the offense. So what are you going to look at defensively in this game, Mike?
I don't got much either. I got the secondary. I mean, they just need to be better than they were in week one against the Argonauts. They gave up a ton of plays, a ton of yards. They should have gave up 3 touchdowns, but the 2 drops in the end zone by the Argonaut receivers helped them out. And, you know, you watch that game against BC, and it was the Argonauts against BC this past weekend, and it was a totally different thing for Ricky Ray and that offense. They didn't look at all like they did against the Hamilton Tiger Cats in week one. So I'm confident that the defensive line will get pressure. We just need better coverage in the secondary, bottom line.
I have to agree with you. I think the defensive line got pretty decent pressure on Ray in that game, but he was just able, like we talked about, to heave him up, and guys like SJ Green and Jeff Fuller just went up and made plays. So I got to think that they'll be able to get pressure again. And then you're right. It really just all relies on that secondary. If they can keep position, if they could be better than they were a week ago, or I guess 2 weeks ago now, they should do well defensively. I just wonder if they're going to make any changes to that defensive backfield after guys kind of got torched. Like there, I don't think there's anyone in the secondary you can say that did a good job. So I'm kind of interested to see throughout the week if they'll make some changes to the secondary and who might be in, who might be out.
Yeah, that's going to be very interesting to see when the depth chart comes out, because I don't know about the status of, you know, Emmanuel Davis and Adu Kane, and there was another guy in there, or Craig Butler. I think Butler's going to be up for a bit longer, but I'm not sure the status of those guys or if any of those people will be back, so... If not, I think that's going to be a problem again.
Yeah, it still could be tough. How do you feel about special teams? How do you feel about the kicker now after watching every kicker in the league basically crap the bed on extra points in the last week or so? Like, did you watch that game in, I think it was the Ottawa-Calgary game, they missed like 5 extra points? All of a sudden, Sergio Castillo doesn't look so bad, does he?
No, he does not. I mean, yeah, the field goal kicking, I remember last year was pretty damn good for most of the season, and it's been getting off to a pretty rough start this season. Yeah, Castillo's, I mean, the first game he had was pretty darn good, so let's see how it goes forward. Hopefully he won't follow the lead of these kickers.
Yeah, especially the guy that he's going to be going up against in this game, Tyler Crepina, who has missed 2 game-winning-ish kicks in the first 2 weeks, and he's got people, I don't know if they're dumping manure on his neighbor's lawn like they did with Paul McCallum all those years ago, but people are pretty ticked off with the kicking game in Saskatchewan, so hey, maybe we'll get lucky, and the Ticats will sneak out with a win because the poor kid who went to McMaster, and to be honest with you, if the Riders cut him, would probably be a Ticat pretty quickly. Maybe he misses another field goal, and the Ticats escape with a victory, and maybe then he does get manure dumped on his neighbor's lawn.
That's a possibility. I'm hoping, you know, I don't wish any poop thrown in anyone's lawn, but I'm hoping that he doesn't perform the best and we sneak away with a win.
All right, so that's it for the game preview. Let's get into some picks. You ready to put your money where your mouth is this week? Well, I guess not literally, but last week I believe I beat you because you took the Argos, I took the Lions. That was the one game we had different, and if you all know, the BC Lions won that game, so I got one up on you going into this week.
Yeah, and I took Ricky Ray and SJ Green on my fantasy team, too. That didn't work out too well either.
Ooh, that's rough. That's rough. Okay, so let's get into this week's pick. This week's picks, Thursday night, kicks off the week in Montreal, where the Lions, who stayed in Ontario, I think I heard that they were practicing at Queens all week, or will be practicing at Queens all week as we record this on Monday. They take on the Alouettes. This was maybe the toughest one for me to pick this week. This one in the Hamilton game, because I keep going back and forth. So, Mike, who do you have in this one?
I got the Lions. Montreal's offense hasn't impressed me that much. I was at the game this weekend in Edmonton, and, you know, they did all right. Edmonton didn't have their best game offensively either, but they're not totaling a bunch of points in their first 2 games, and I think that BC has significantly underperformed offensively, at least in the first 2 games. So I got to take the Lions. I think they're just going to really take off in this game.
All right. You convinced me. I had them both written down here because I couldn't decide, but your reasons for taking the Lions, I think, are sound. I'm going to go with them as well. You're right. That Montreal offense has not looked great. They haven't looked horrible like we've seen in the past couple of years. They're a little more mediocre, I think, but I think at some point they'll get rolling. I just think it's it's a little early. The only reason I would go with the Owls is that it's tough for BC to be away from home for that long, but their body should be adjusted to the Eastern time, and they are a better team than Montreal. I think that's the way you gotta just look at it. So you know what, I'm gonna agree with you on everything you said. I'm gonna take the Lions. Next up, we got the Friday night game. This one could be a doozy. We got the Calgary Stampeders heading into Winnipeg to take on the Bombers. Mike, who do you got in this one?
I have the Stampeders. I think Winnipeg is a good team. You know, we saw some of that takeaway defense last game against the Riders. You know, they're famous for last year. And that always helps them out. But Calgary's just Calgary, and I think they're going to come away with a win.
Yeah, I think until they start losing, just got to kind of pick the Stamps. You know, like there's no reason not to pick them. I think Winnipeg, they escaped Saskatchewan by the skin of their teeth. So, yeah, give me the Stamps in this one. Saturday, the doubleheader kicks off in our nation's capital with the Ottawa Redblacks hosting the Toronto Argonauts. Mike, who do you have in this one?
Got to go Ottawa. Toronto was, you know, did not imp- – I didn't see all the game last week, but from what I saw, they weren't very impressive, especially on offense. And Ottawa, I think, is a really good team, so I got to take Ottawa.
I don't think that the Argos offense can keep pace with Ottawa's offense. They are scoring at will. They played those two games against Calgary, and they kind of just ran up and down the field. And that game last week Deontay Spencer's not going to have like 400 yards of like 400 total yards in the game or anything like that going in this one. But I just think Ottawa has too much firepower for the Argos to keep pace. I think it might be close to beginning, but then I think you see sort of Ottawa take control later and kind of run away with this one. So I too have the Red Blacks. And then the finale, the week caps off in Saskatchewan with the Rough Riders hosting our Hamilton Tiger Cats. Mike, who did you take in this one?
I take the Ticats, even though, you know, they lost their first game and the Riders lost their first game at their new stadium. I don't really have much reason for taking them. I'm just taking the Ticats.
So here's my reason. I'm also taking the Ticats. And like we discussed earlier, I'm deathly afraid of this game, but I'm going to take the Cats. And this is the only reason I can latch on to, because I think both these teams are probably about on par with each other right now. And if that's the case, I usually go with the home team. But here's why I'm going to go with the Cats. Kevin Glenn had a pretty darn good game against Winnipeg. Threw for like 375 yards, had four touchdowns. Yes, he had a couple of interceptions, but even when Kevin Glenn has a great game, he throws a pick or two. Kevin Glenn usually follows up those games with really bad games or games where he doesn't set the world on fire. You know what I mean? And we saw a couple of Saskatchewan receivers in Nick Dembski and Caleb Hawley get hurt. Now, they still have Bakari Grant. They still have Daron Carter. They still have Rob Bagg. They still have Naaman Roosevelt. They still have some firepower. But to lose those two guys, and with Kevin Glenn coming off a massive game where they scored 40 points, I'm gonna use the Kevin Glenn corollary on this and say, because he played well in week two, he's going to regress back to the mean in week three, and that's what's going to be the difference in the Ticats eking out a win. This is not going to be a blowout by any stretch of the imagination. This is going to be a close game throughout, and maybe Sergio Castillo kicks the game-winning field goal with no time left and sends the Rider fans home upset and makes us happy here in Steeltown and you out there in Edmonton.
That would be lovely. I'd rather have a non-stressful win, but any way they can get it, I'd be overjoyed. We need that first win, Josh. We need that first win of the season.
We do, especially before they come home and play a couple of West teams in BC and Edmonton, before they then head off to Calgary. And I mean, like, they're in a tough stretch of games here. And if they were to get this win and then maybe get some momentum coming into this two-game homestand that they're going to have in the next couple of weeks, who knows? By the end of the month, maybe we're talking about a 3-1 Ticats team, and then all of a sudden we're like, man, who cares what happened in week one?
I hope you're right on that because, you know, we've always – at least we've had a tough time. The Ticats have had a tough time at the start of seasons for the last, you know, 5 or 6 years, or even maybe longer than that. And I just think it's important to get those first wins in early.
The wins in July count just as much as the wins in October. A win is a win is a win. So you get as many of them as you can, man. I don't care when they get them. Just get them all. Okay, so picks are out of the way. Now we got our questions. We got one this week. It's another over-under after your call for more over-unders. We were obliged by the man who gave us the over-unders last time, Adam. So his one over-under this week was over or under 2,449.5 all-purpose yards for Brandon Banks. Now, before you answer, I just want to say how incredibly accurate this was. So I told you this off mic. I'm going to tell everyone listening here. When I decided to sit down and, okay, how am I going to do this? I did some math. I had some time on my hands, and I did some math, and I did Banks's averages for rushing, receiving, kickoff returns, punt returns per game. Then I multiplied all those numbers by 18, considering I think he's going to play 18 games this year. And then I kind of rounded them. Like if one was at like 613, I would round it up to say 650 or whatever it was. And then when I rounded them up, I got the total. The total was 2,450, which is so incredible that I was just like you, I think it was you that said it before we started recording. Like this dude should be gambling or bookmaking for someone because to be that close, maybe that's what he did. And I'm sitting here going, well, this is what I did. Maybe that's – but that was just so incredible that I was like, okay, this is how I'm going to decide on what I'm going to pick. And I was like, oh, my God, it's 0.5 yards above? That's nuts. So I just wanted to get that out there. But now that I've said that, Mike, what are you taking, over or under 2,449.5 yards for Speedy B?
I'm going to go over, even though it was – I'm not sure on the numbers exactly, but it seemed like his numbers might have been down last year in the return game. But I think that he might be more involved in the offense, so I think it might balance out, and he just barely gets over that number.
Okay, see, I'm going to go in the opposite direction, and I'm going to say that he barely is under, and my reasoning for it is – I think he won't have as many chances to return kickoffs as last year. I think he had something around 1,200 to 1,300 kickoff return yards, which was by far the largest he's ever had in a season since he's been with the Ticats. I think either the teams will kick away from Banks. I think we saw that in Toronto. I think it was Richard Leonard who had a couple of kickoff returns for the Tabbies. So teams will kick away from him. And maybe this is just me being the ever-positive optimist. Or maybe it's just wishful thinking, but the defense won't give up as many points as they did last year, so there'll be fewer kickoffs for Speedy B to field. So I'll say very, very slightly under, although you do make an excellent argument by saying he might be used more in the receiving game, especially now with Terrence Tolliver out. So I don't know. I think this is going to be close. I think if he's over, he's over very slightly, and if he's under, I think he's under very slightly. I think this line is about as close to perfect as you can get.
Yeah, it's a pretty impressive line he got there. It makes me think that he maybe bet some over-unders on Pro Line or something. So, good on you.
He did offer us a second question, and I want him to know that we're not avoiding it. It's just this has taken some thinking on both Mike and my's part. So we're going to hold off on this second question, which is one about fielding an all-Canadian all-star team. We're going to hold off on that till next week to give us some chances to maybe tweak what we have and find some more guys to play some places. But, yeah, that's an excellent question and one that I think deserves a lot more attention than just a couple of days of scrambling to fill in names. So next week when we come back for questions, we will answer that one. And that's going to be a fun one. I think it's going to have a lot of debate to it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to really getting sink my teeth into it and get the best team on the field possible.
So that's the show for this week. Remember that you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and that we are all now so that's not a word. We are also now on Google Play and Stitcher, or you can listen to it or download it at 3downnation.com. If you want to ask us a question, you can hit Mike or myself up on Twitter. Mike, your Twitter handle as always, please.
Mike_Ticats.
And I am JoshSmith_82. And of course, Adam posts his questions on the 3downnation comment section. You can also do that as well. Or if you want, you can fire us off an email. We have an email address, podski@gmail.com. We have yet to receive one email, and I think we talked about this last week, how people probably don't use email anymore, and we're horribly behind the times. But who knows? Maybe we'll get one day, probably telling us that we suck, and then we'll laugh at that, and we'll also read it on the air. So that was episode 78 of Podski Wee Wee. I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.